Welcome to the Wednesday Bible Conversation for the Winnipeg Covenant Churches. This is me, Gavin.
This is Eric.
And this is Cody.
And today we continue our four-part mini-series of conversations on the Gospel of Matthew, discussing chapters 14 through 20 on this fine, chilly day. You are encouraged to read that section of Scripture, listen into our thoughts and reflections on the podcast, and then contribute your own thoughts and responses in the comment section of the post on winnipegcovenant.ca, or engage a friend or two in some conversation. We invite you to pay attention. God is speaking in the Scriptures. Pay attention. God is speaking in your own heart. And pay attention, because God is speaking in the wisdom of one another. Low energy today.
Oh, yeah.
I made some real strong coffee for us.
The strongest.
I'm having tea instead, because you guys scared me off of that stuff.
It's stiff.
It is stiff. What are we doing today? Does Eric know which section we're in?
We'll find out.
Matthew.
We will find out. We're in Matthew. I know that much. You know, I love these kind of days, actually. It's a little on the cold side for my liking, yep. But at least when I drove over here, just bright,
sunny
crisp,
today.
Yep. Sunny, beauty winter day.
Yeah. We do get sunshine.
Although when we post this, we have no idea what...
That's true. We are recording this one a little early, so...
So
that's fine.
Maybe be like raining or something.
Oh, yeah, that'd be strange.
Let's hope plus 20.
Oh, yeah. No one would complain. If
camping
it was
weather.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it. We got a nice long section here to deal with. So, after hearing of the upstart Rabbi Jesus, King Herod, that's not the one who tried to kill the babies in Matthew 2, but a different Herod, had his most illogical anxieties provoked. Could this Jesus, he wondered, actually be John the Baptist come back from the dead? Maybe you're thinking, wait, John's dead? I thought he was just in prison. Well, cue the flashback. The narrator tracks back sometime to a grisly dinner party in which sex, drugs, and rock and roll commingle to result in the beheading of the prophet at the behest of a dirty dancing girl working proxy for her incestuous mother.
Yeah.
The Bible!
Yeah. That's essentially what...
That's the story. Jesus hears of John's death sometime later and tried to find some quiet to process. But... as usually happened, he was soon beset upon by crowds. Now, Jesus would host something of a dinner party himself in this moment, but with a far different tone than Herod's immoral soiree. The dinner Jesus hosts is for the huddled masses who followed him to a desolate place, and with only two sardines and five loaves of bread, Jesus miraculously provided for well more than 5,000 people out of his sheer compassion and the abundance of God. Jesus sent the disciples back across the lake in a boat while he continued to seek some of that quiet time and space for prayer. When it was night and the disciples' boat was bobbing haphazardly on the large waves of the Galilee, Jesus decided he'd better catch up with them by walking out to them across the surface of the water. No, it wasn't January in Manitoba. The sea was not frozen. This was God mode stuff. Jesus looked like an apparition floating on the waves, and the disciples were freaked. But Jesus reassured them it was not some spooky specter, it was him. Hey, neat trick! Peter wanted to try too, but he quickly proved to lack the faith required, and luckily Jesus was there to act as his PFD, that's Peter flotation device, and he kept Peter from sinking to the depths. They both boarded the boat, the wind and the water stilled, and the disciples were astonished, and as they reached the other side of the lake... Still no respite for Jesus, because once again the crowds came seeking healing. Chapter 15 begins with another confrontation with the Pharisees. This time over hand-washing rituals, Jesus launches into some teaching about true purity, trying to get his meaning across to the Pharisees and then to the whole crowd, then to just his disciples, and finally just to Peter. Maybe just one of these nidgets is going to get to the point. Mm-hmm. Jesus heads north to the region of Tyre and Sidon, where he encountered a non-Jewish woman of extraordinary faith, and he brings her daughter some healing. Then it's back to the Galilee area where there is more en masse teaching and healing and a dang near copycat feeding miracle to what happened last chapter. This time it's a crowd of more than 4,000 who are fed with just a couple sack lunches. As chapter 16 begins, another religious sect takes a turn to test Jesus. It's the Sadducees, who are definitely, in fact, so sad, you see. They wanted a proof of Jesus' authority in the form of miracles, because apparently they hadn't read the last 13 chapters. Jesus kind of evades again, mentioning that he'll eventually give them just the Jonah sign. Jesus felt the need to warn his disciples about these ultra-religious types, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, but they totally missed the point, thinking with their stomachs instead of their heads. In a place called Caesarea Philippi, Jesus plays Q&A with the disciples. What are people saying about him on the streets? What's the local scuttlebutt? Well, he's clearly some kind of prophet, they say, but Jesus pressed them further. Well, what did they say? What does his own friends have to say about his identity? Good question. Peter boldly steps to the plate and takes a swing. I'm going to say Messiah, son of living God. Bingo! Good answer, kid. A revelation even. But strangely, Jesus urged the disciples to keep that truth to themselves for now. You see, Messiah, son of God, those could be extremely misleading terms. Jesus knew he would have to suffer and die before returning from death. But Peter and co. just could not reconcile that plot with Jesus' status as the Messiah. But it really do be like that. And Jesus warned them that if Peter and crew wanted to be real followers, that they should probably expect some kind of similar storyline hinged upon crucifixion for themselves. The only way to save yourself is through losing your death grip on life. Okay. Chapter 17. In another moment of revelation as to who Jesus is, we call this story transfiguration, but you could also go with a word like metamorphosis or transformation. It makes me happy to think of Jesus as the first ever transformer. He is, in fact, the one who is more than meets the eye. Anywho, it's a mysterious, profound moment on a mountaintop where a select few of the disciples get a glimpse at a glowed-up Jesus chatting with saints of old. It so excites Peter that he can basically only think of setting up camp and staying in the moment forever. Suddenly, very much so like at the baptism of Jesus, a voice from heaven speaks, affirming Jesus as the beloved Son and commanding the disciples to listen to him when they come back down from the transformation mountain. Jesus recommends they keep that whole thing hush-hush for the time being. Soon, Jesus is back at healing. Now, it's a demon-possessed boy who the other disciples, the ones who missed the revelation up on the hill, had been unable to help on account of their too small faith. Jesus predicts his death again, his resurrection again, and then arrives back at home in the town of Capernaum, where he pays a tax bill with the money that is found inside of a fish. That's what it says. Next, we have the fourth of Jesus' five major discourses in Matthew's gospel. Lots of teaching, lots of red letters. Jesus instructed his followers about greatness in the kingdom, about turning from sin and getting real childlike. He talked about lost sheep pursued by their shepherd and God's desire that no one would perish. He talked about confronting sin in the context of community and the dire necessity of forgiveness. This chapter, 18, it's sometimes referred to as the discourse of the church or the discourse on the church, and maybe you can see why. It's a big, loud, clear call to humility. Time for a change of scenery. Jesus leaves Galilee and heads south this time, that is, closer to Jerusalem. While he was in the Judean region east of the Jordan River, Jesus continued to heal the sick as crowds once again congregated around him. The Pharisees are up to their usual tricks, trying to trap Jesus with a sticky question. This time it's something about the religious laws around marriage and divorce. And Jesus has a hot take on that, as you might suspect. Then Jesus blesses some children the disciples had felt were mostly just a nuisance. However, Jesus insisted that the kiddos should toddle right on up to him. The kingdom of heaven belongs to these little ones. But get this, the rich people, well, it would be easier for a big smelly camel to squeeze through the eye of a needle for them than for them to enter the kingdom. Jesus' whole interaction with a wealthy fella kind of surprises and astounds the disciples. The kingdom feels backwards, upside down, inverse from the rules of the world. In the kingdom, it's the least that are great and the powerful that are at the bottom. Speaking of the whole wacky way that the kingdom and the surprising upside down nature of things are that are yet to come, Jesus tells a parable about equal wages paid for disproportionate work, which is a story of God's peculiar grace, his unique approach to fairness, further expounding on Jesus' first now, last later, and vice versa teaching. Now nearing Jerusalem, Jesus predicted his death and resurrection for a third time. Third time's a charm, guys. And then in one of the most embarrassing moments for my accounting, recorded in the Gospels, even after all of this teaching about humility and the last being first, James and John's mommy come sniffing around with Jesus, trying to make this political pitch for her cute little boys to have primo seats in Jesus' cabinet when he becomes the prime minister. As the kids say, SMH. That's shake my head. It's not something bad. If you didn't know what that meant.
I had no idea.
It was not a naughty word. These people had no idea what they're even asking for, but they insisted, oh, we know. Oh, we know, Jesus. In the end, Jesus says, it's not even really his decision who gets those chairs, but it's the Father's. And also, guys, seriously, knock it off with the self-seeking and self-promoting. It's kind of pathetic. Be a servant. It's a way better look, I promise you. And the final little narrative in our section for today, one last healing story in which Jesus restores the sight of two blind men outside of the town of Jericho who refuse to stop shouting for mercy. Jesus does the merciful deed. And the men, after being healed, followed right behind him as they approached the big city of Jerusalem.
It's a good story.
It's the greatest story ever told.
I'm really enjoying Matthew. The whole thing? Or? I'm enjoying Matthew, the whole bit of it.
It is good. It's good storytelling.
Yeah, this whole knitting together of these stories.
This section is, this is my buddy Dan Charles says, this is a banger of a section.
It's a real banger. It's a real banger.
It's a real banger.
You know, it was interesting when you were talking about that coin in the fish's mouth thing.
Yeah.
So I was preaching this last week, I guess when people hear this a couple weeks ago, on the calling of the disciples. And when I was looking at one of the commentaries, they were talking about sort of the fish industry at the time and named off a bunch of the fish that would have been in the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah.
I did not know this, and this guy could have been totally wrong, but he said that carp and catfish would have been.
Ooh.
So imagine Jesus pulling up a catfish in this scenario. And those things are disgusting as it is. And then a coin comes, throws up a coin. So that catfish thing threw me off, though, in the Sea of Galilee. You always envision it being like red snapper in there or something looking really nice or a rainbow trout, but catfish. Catfish.
I like the idea of Jesus noodling with his buddies.
Yeah.
He's
got the hand in the mud.
Just like, here, fishy. On. That's crazy.
Oh, boy.
Beside the point, yeah.
Let's chat it up here, fellas. Let's chop it up. Chat it up. Chop it up. Let's go now. What word, phrase, theme most resonated with you personally as you read this section of Matthew? What section was that? I forget already. 14 through 20, that's what it was.
14 to 20.
Irrelevant, Eric.
Yeah.
Hey,
what are we in, Romans?
Those first texts didn't have these numbers, so I'm going with that.
That's true.
I'm going with that.
Why did you hit us?
First, I have a question for you. What would the sign of Jonah look like as like a gang sign? That's all I could think of when you were talking about it.
This.
Oh, like a dove?
It would be like the whale tail.
The whale tail?
The whale tail.
I think it would have been like the cross or something. One of those, after a big touchdown. For me, I don't know if it's, some of it is the way I have been confused on the chapters, I'll be honest, because some of it is we're reading ahead, but in church we're like at a different spot,
yep.
and I just keep kind of reading and cycling. But the good thing about that, for me, has been sometimes you get the connection of stories that you never...
Yeah, you see how they belong
to each
other.
You never had before?
Yeah.
So this time, I mean, how many times have we encountered that Peter, walking to Jesus? I've encountered that story a lot. I don't often get that story right after a Sunday where you're talking about the calling of early. Cody was talking about the calling of early disciples. And in a different way, I felt like it was just another. It wasn't just him calling him out of the boat onto the water, but it was into deeper discipleship. And so for me, some of it was just the simple word, like come, come. And that was the same word he gave to those early disciples.
Yep.
And I was just kind of in my imagination thinking through, so that first leaving, for sure it would have been risky and all those other things.
Yeah, when they drop the nets.
But there would have been some excitement to that. It's like, okay, I got a new vocation. I got a new thing going here. What I felt this time as I went through was, so you had that maybe more on the excitement side, is how I sort of read that story, the first calling. This one was more on the anxiety side. Of like, okay, here we are. We're following Jesus. Now we're in a boat that he made us get into.
Yeah.
And
he's on the water.
He's on the water. We're on the water. And it's it's scary. It says like the disciples are, they're tripped out here.
Yeah.
And the invitation's the same. And so it's like, come. And I don't know, maybe that's a totally wrong reading of these stories, but it felt to me a lot like our lives. I'll speak for you guys. Our lives of discipleship.
You always do.
I always do. So our lives of discipleship, I'm just kidding. You know, oftentimes there's an excitement at the start. You see it every year. You're at camp or something and someone gives their life to Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like you get further into walking with Jesus and you sort of realize like, oh, it's not all going to be like, you know, balloons, candies, roses, you know, toys
sometimes,
and goodies.
Yeah, when Jesus says come, sometimes it's like exciting and new and fun, and sometimes it's like, that's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And I think the, you know, to me it sort of, it angled towards that, I love how you said it, losing your death grip on life.
Yeah.
And so for me, those words, you know, Jesus tells his disciples, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. For those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world and forfeit their souls? Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's like something I could just read every day to sort of be reminded of the struggle of the different things that call us to come.
Yeah. 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 It's totally the backwards way of doing things in Jesus' mind is like, mm-hmm. the only way to get life is to completely lose yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the music, the moment you want it, you better never let it go. Mom's spaghetti.
Man, that song, that song pumps up.
How about you, Cody? What kind of caught your attention?
Well, I had a few things that caught my attention, and one of them, you know, as Eric was talking
about. You okay there, buddy?
Wow.
I heard like weird phantom sneezes or something.
I like to suppress the sneeze.
You got to let that out.
That's the Holy Spirit trying to escape your body.
No.
You got to say, God bless you, to cram it back in there. Bless you, bless you.
Push it back.
Cram it back in.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You know what? I think it was in the Transfiguration. The first thing that caught me was the familiar words of, this is my son, whom I love, right? So that was reminiscent of the baptism.
Just like
story.
The baptism, yeah.
But as Eric said, sort of taking it to a new level, the words that are added in the Transfiguration are listen to his voice, listen to him. And so maybe there is something certainly that Matthew is building on in these stories as they kind of replicate. There's a new layer in each of them and taking you further into the mystery of Jesus being the Messiah. I think I was jarred by the story of the Canaanite woman who was healed in the end, but just, I don't think I noticed how much Jesus ignored her. Like, I didn't notice that Jesus did not answer a word. That's what the text says when she has this request.
Yeah, for her daughter to be healed, yeah.
I was just shocked. Yeah. Like, and then she basically has to, you know, do everything to get his attention, and then he's just like, you know what? That was a sweet answer.
She's got to almost like sort of like outwit him or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a very, very strange story. And this last one, which is way half-baked, but as I was listening to it on audio, so if there's no chapters originally in the audio, they don't stop, at least my audio version, with the headings. Hmm. So they have the discourse about marriage and about how they come to try and trick him and be like, is it permissible for someone to divorce their wife? And Jesus goes on this big discourse. And then he ends it with this strange section on eunuchs. Do you remember?
I do.
And
remember.
Then he has his line that says, like, some have basically become like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of God, basically all in on the kingdom of God. And then it says, then people were bringing children to him, as if this was the exact same discourse, and as if the very next thing that happened was people started bringing their kids to him.
Yep.
And it actually even references in that children's section that, you know, the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. But I had this thought. I was like, I wonder if they heard this and were like, hey, we want to get our kids in on this, like, all in for the kingdom business, and have Jesus put his hands on them and pray that they would basically, like, forsake all for this kingdom somehow. So it's a very strange section before the children blessing section, but in audio, it sounds like it's immediately right away. And I thought, that's a very strange turn of events that people all of a sudden then would be bringing kids to him.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like marriage, divorce, kids, eunuchs. You never hear Focus on the Family doesn't ever talk about eunuchs. How about that, Chuck Swindoll? Where's all your chat about eunuchs?
Isn't that Dobson?
Oh, Dobson. No, yeah.
Don't besmirch the good name.
I know. Right. I don't even know. I don't listen to those things. But
anyways, those are things that stood out to me.
I like that idea, though.
Yeah. Very cool.
Today's devotional is on Unix.
Oh boy.
Adventures in Odyssey.
McGee and me. McGee and me covering the Unix.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, for me, let me think. It's one of the things was just like sort of an impression that I had of like I don't know. So like I guess sort of feeling like compassionate for Jesus. So he finds out that his friend dies. John, who's like his cousin or something, some sort of relative, friend. They're contemporaries. They obviously had some significant shared moments together. And Jesus' first impulse is like, oh man, I need to like think this through. I gotta go have some quiet and pray and stuff. And like he tries to do that, and then it's like crowds set on him. And then he takes care of the crowds, and then he's like, I gotta get out of here, let's cross the lake, kind of thing. And he again, it's well then he goes and he gets some quiet, I guess, while he tries to send the disciples away. And then when it's nighttime, he starts walking back across the water to them. They're freaking out. So he has to help them deal with their situation, kind of thing. He gets to the other side of the lake, still no quiet. There's more crowds there. And like, I just kind of felt like I felt bad that Jesus never got like the break that he wanted, really. Like, I guess he stole away a couple hours there before evening, and walking on the water. But, yeah, I know. I just felt that a little bit, like Jesus feeling the sadness and some of the disorientation of losing a friend and like wanting the quiet and wanting some time to pray and just reflect a little bit, and like not really getting it because life is busy and people had demands of him. And I don't know, I think it just like I just felt it, that's all. I don't have much to say about it. I think for me, maybe like another theme that resonated with me was just like maybe the question of who is Jesus. And it starts like right from sort of the beginning of the section where Herod is basically like, who is this Jesus guy? Like, is this John the Baptist back from the dead? And then it's, you know, and then it sort of rolls on from there. You know, the disciples, when Jesus walks on the water, they're kind of like, man, who is this guy? Like, you must be the Son of God if you can walk on the water and calm the waves. And then Jesus has the interaction in Matthew 16 of like, who do people say I am? Who do you say I am? There's the transfiguration moment of like the voice of the Father saying, this is my beloved Son. So there's just like all this who is Jesus kind of stuff that happens over and over and over again. And I think I was just struck by that as like a motif through this whole section of like the identity of Jesus coming into question by different people in different ways, and all kinds of different answers emerge. He's, you know, is he like a prophet? Is he the Son of God? Is he the Messiah? What does all this mean? And then Jesus keeps kind of like coming back over and over again to like, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the one who's going to die and rise from the dead. That's like Jesus sort of self-identity kind of thing. That's how he keeps like coming back to his self-understanding. This is who I am. I'm the one that's going to die and rise again. So it was just, there was an interesting thread throughout that whole section for me.
It feels to me a little like, you know, by the time we're in this part of the gospel, like by our next session, it's pretty much just the way to the cross. But it's almost like, you know, when you're on a road trip or something and you're in a pretty desolate place and like you're listening and it's like, okay, you're getting a crystal signal. And then all of a sudden it kind of disappears. Then you're like, you know, futzing with it. And then you get it. Okay, found another signal. That's like, okay. It feels a little bit like that to me. It's like you're getting these intermittent, like Jesus, like you were saying, self-disclosing.
Yeah.
This is who I am. But then a lot of like resistance.
Static. Kind of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting how one of the things I like about doing this together is that we all feel and experience different things. Because I was thinking about Jesus, you know, he wants to get away, his buddies died, and I felt it maybe in a different way, because there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously that would have been, you know, a really good thing, but in some ways, maybe
who are you to tell Jesus his response is wrong?
Exactly. But then in the same way, who are we to say, you know, maybe it was precipitated by there being a need there. But maybe, again, because you're reading in this section, I'm like, okay, well, here's Jesus who talks about those who want to save their life will lose it. Yeah. And it's like he's embodying this other's centeredness, and he felt something there. He's not just talking about like sort of, you know, sort of cheap self-care kind of experience.
And, no, no.
It's like, okay, there's something really here that Jesus is, he's laying his life down.
Yeah.
Again and again.
Yep. And it is like, it is pretty remarkable that like as grieved as Jesus, I assume must have been, mm-hmm. and is probably as like emotionally tired and maybe physically tired. Dude walks a lot. He's like walking to the northern part of the country, yeah. all the way down to Judea, back and forth around the lake, mm-hmm. walking on the lake. Like he must be tired, but like he always answers the bell. There's not one time mm-hmm. where Jesus is like, you know, the crowds have gathered and he says to Peter, like, tell them to bugger off. Like that doesn't ever happen yeah, ever in no. the story. He's always ready to go.
Yeah. You know, this, when I was preaching, I forgot to mention this in my sermon, but in the Gospels, Jesus, there's such an, like I talked about impulsivity. I'm impulsive sometimes in the wrong way, many times in the wrong way, but there's an impulsivity to Jesus in the Gospels where it's like, he can't help it. Right. And there's that hymn we sing, take my hands and let them move at the impulse of your love. So mm-hmm. like thinking about the impulse by which we move mm-hmm. and so much nowadays, certainly the impulse is for like seclusion, reclusion, mm-hmm. Rest. These are all good things. But if that's always our impulse, then it might be going against actually the impulse of the Christ who says, I'm looking outward and seeing mm-hmm. the needs of others. And even when mm-hmm. my impulse is this, there has to be an impulse that's greater than that, that sort of like supersedes it. And that seems to be what is happening here.
Yeah.
Jesus is really, like you said, embodying this way
yeah.
for his mm. disciples.
It's probably also worth like just the sort of like side comment that when Jesus withdraws mm-hmm. in those times, like he withdraws to go and pray and like, like he does not just like disappear into his Netflix queue
not
for the next
shows,
14
like
hours.
Like, today.
There's nothing wrong with wanting to watch a show, but I'm just saying that like our sort of some of our notions of like what pulling back, caring for ourselves or whatever, it's like
sauna by the sea.
They're super like
sauna by the sea.
They're super.
Say it.
I don't know.
Are they selfish?
Yeah, sometimes. They are. They are selfish sometimes. Yeah. And
they're self-focused. Anyway.
At least I would say maybe misguided is like the word that I'm trying to come up with. Like they're misguided. We think that we know like this is going to fill my tank. Mm-hmm. 17 episodes in a row of Grey's Anatomy or like two buckets of Ben and Jerry's by myself in a room crying or whatever. It's like, those are not the things that Jesus ever models. In Jesus' grief and his fatigue, Jesus does model pulling back, mm-hmm. but it's always for like silence and prayer. It's never to just fill his life with other noise. That's never what he does.
Communion with the Father. And like, when you say that word self-focus, maybe that was you that said that, Eric, that there is a mystery that most people don't get to in the Christian life where God focus actually recharges your batteries and self focus doesn't always in the end.
Yeah.
And somehow mm-hmm. through the life of Jesus, this communion and prayer with the Father, there seemed to be a way that he said, this is how mm-hmm. I actually go back into the world mm-hmm. and am better.
Yeah. 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 It would be a very different thing. I think if Jesus just oscillated between, you know, focusing all of his energy on people and then like withdraw and focus all of his energy on himself mm-hmm. and then back to the people and then back to himself. The truth is that all the time Jesus is focusing on his Father. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes it is in the quiet of prayer and mm-hmm. sometimes it is in caring for mm-hmm. those who bear the image of God. He's always focusing on God. Huh. He's not ever just like, you know, being selfish mm-hmm. or fixating on like his own mm-hmm. I don't know, neediness and gratifying his little mm-hmm. lingering longings or something like that. So, yeah.
He's not anti-good time, though. I mean, we've experienced that in the gospel, right?
Yep.
And he's all for a good time.
He's all for a good time, but it's still under the, you know, the loving gaze of the Father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's nice.
Man, we've been talking about a lot of stuff here. Maybe we should just skip to the end. Nah, let's do that. What's the invitation for us as a community of disciples? We've got a lot of stuff going on in here. There's teaching and healing and good times and bad times and some hilarious moments, all kinds of stuff. What does this section invite us to as a community of disciples? What's the summons for those of us who would follow Jesus?
Who wants to go?
I'll go.
All right.
I'm going to go first.
Wow, that doesn't happen.
I never do
that
very often. Yeah. Because I don't have much to say. I think what, like, for sure, the first half of all this section really focused on that, like, in my mind, on that, like, who is Jesus? The question just kept emerging in different ways. The second half of this narrative, like, from after chapter 17 kind of thing, it really seemed to me like the word on repeat was sort of like humility. Hmm. And something about like the call to childlikeness, the willingness to lay down your life, the call to serve and not get served. And I don't have a great deal to say about it other than Jesus says that the kingdom is about like receiving by means of getting real small.
Yeah. And that's going to be hard for you.
Yeah, that's right.
You are the biggest.
It's true. I am very large.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, I think there's that call to humility that just echoed over and over and over again, for sure, in the second half of that section that we read.
We just watched Despicable Me, the first one again. Shrink Ray! I just envisioned you getting the shrink ray and just going, phew. Although they found out in the movie that things got enormous soon after. It was the bigger the object that they shrunk, then the quicker the effects wore off. But anyways, this ties in nothing. This is a fictional
I've never movie. Seen that movie.
You've never seen Despicable Me?
I don't really watch
You've
it.
You've seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I have seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Same kind of idea. And the sequel, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You need to watch Despicable Me.
All right. That's maybe I stuff. Will.
Except after your... That's self-focus, probably. No, hey, that's me focused. That's I'm wanting you,
that's me focusing on you by watching movies, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you got? Anyone else?
Yeah, I got...
Invitation to the community?
I think, for me, it was... I mean, it's strange that there's two feeding stories so close together, right? Mm-hmm. But it was the first one that really stood out to me in the line when he says, you know, you need to give them something to eat. We have 5 loaves... of bread and 2 fish. Then there's this line that I don't know is anywhere else in the Gospels. Bring them here to me. And I was like, maybe that is in some of the other Gospels, but this is such a profound line to me because, you know, we always talk about this section and it's such a simple call that the most simple things that you have often just remain sort of simple individual things unless we bring them to Jesus. And so I guess the call would be, if you're feeling compelled, you know, you're part of a church and maybe it comes to you're giving to that church. Maybe it's for somebody that's in need around you. And always the thing that happens in our minds is this, you know, why bother? Because it's barely going to make a dent. Bring it to Jesus. Because really, this story, they had like no food there. But Jesus said, bring it to me. Watch this.
Yeah.
Watch something. And watch something. Me now. Miraculous happened. And so why would we think it would be any different today if we bring our small and significant gifts to Jesus and see what he does with them in our communities?
It's good.
Supersize them. That'd be awesome. Yeah. It's budget season.
How about you?
You know, yeah, for me, it's hard to... Well, maybe in a similar way to what we were talking about earlier, where Jesus' impulse was to just go away after, you know, the death of a friend and to experience some quiet, and yet there was people in front of him. For me, you know, we had talked maybe about should we do this podcast this week, should we not? One of our dear friends, Stan, passed away very suddenly. And for me, the impulse was like there's something healing about the scriptures. There's something healing about being with others. Certainly there is time and space to reflect and to get away and to do those things, and that's a good thing too.
We'll do some of that also.
We will do some of that as well. But so I had Stan on my mind as I was thinking about this this section. And so my call to the community is kind of based on like some of the character of who Stan was. and what I experienced in this section. There's a very unique, kind of a strange text in Matthew 15. That stuff about, you know, the you people honor me with your lips, but your heart is far from me. Mm-hmm. Cody and I talked earlier.
Yeah, some of the purity stuff Jesus talks about.
And some of the, like, Corbin and these traditions. Yep. And even the piece about the disciples come up to Jesus and they're like, oh, you offended the Pharisees.
Yeah.
And you always say, it's the coolest to be offended these days.
Oh, it is the coolest. It's There's nothing cooler than being offended.
Stan didn't really care about offending people in some ways. And I actually love that about him. Cody and I talked about Stan was a unique character in his ability to follow through on Jesus' word to us for our yes to be yes and our no to be no. Hmm. And I felt that a little bit in, you know, even when this section of, like, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. My invitation to the community was just to do a little bit of, like, integrity auditing of, like, what is it that we're saying with our mouths and what is it that we're actually doing? Because I was always so encouraged by Stan and who he was. And if he said yes, he meant it.
Yeah.
And he followed through on it. And if he said no, he meant it and he followed through on it.
Yeah.
So that's the one piece. And then the other, without going into this whole Corbin idea, but to a degree, there were people that were just think of making excuses. They were just making excuses about not following through on the impulse of their faith. Hmm. And so that would be the other one, is like, do a little bit of an integrity audit and then just be bold enough to ask yourself the questions, like, what are the excuses that are keeping me from following Jesus? Mm. Oh. So.
That's good.
Yeah.
Not easy stuff.
No.
No.
So.
We should.
So what are my excuses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Starting with you. No. Right here, right now.
Yeah.
No.
That's an extensive list.
No, it's good. I think, you know what? We might as well roll on snacks here. We're saying, I didn't know Stan nearly as well as you guys did, but every time I chatted with Stan, invariably the conversation turned to food. He liked,
praise God.
He liked cooking. Yes. He liked eating.
Yes.
We're going Stan snacks.
I'm the same.
Yes.
I'm the same. I like those things too. So
yes.
Let's,
in honor of Stan.
In honor of Stan. You're sitting down to read these chapters. What kind of drink or snack would pair best with this reading?
Okay. I'm going to go first so you guys don't steal mine. Because Jesus talks a lot about the little people in this one, and Stan, especially during the pandemic, Stan and Cindy would, like, make ridiculous amounts of food and just bring it to people's door. Mm-hmm. And one time I remember he brought over ribs. He was very good at making ribs, and my kids loved it. And I'll never forget Esther. She would have been pretty young at the time with, like, her face full of sauce.
Oh, that's amazing.
And we sent a picture to Stan, and he loved it. And she ate so many ribs, that's and amazing. All my kids did. So I'm going ribs. And I think that we had Cindy's mac and cheese, which was with that meal. Which
little
was,
kids also love. Oh, mac
they
and
knew
cheese.
Exactly.
Big kids, like, love too.
Yeah, they adult were like, Mom, kids. Why do you suck at cooking?
That's how you enter the kingdom with that kind of attitude.
Oh, that's amazing. So that's where I'm going with.
I love
miss
it.
Him terribly.
That's funny. Yeah. I was looking actually at Instagram and a meal that Stan had made in his pizza oven. It was vegetables and naan bread done in the uni, and then Stan made fish curry and tandoori chicken.
Oh,
this is a big time feast. But I was like, oh, I like that. It's got the bread and it's got the fish, just like in the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. That's a nice Stan meal that connects.
That's amazing.
It's a snack.
Yeah. For me, in this section, I think you experience the pull between the lures of this world and the pull between, like, following deeper and deeper in a life of faith, following Jesus and the classic Stan, pulled pork, like,
pulled.
You know, that might, maybe is his middle name. I don't know. it may as well have been. I love, and Stan, he crushed it on making pulled pork.
Yes, he did.
And I think the beverage, which I have had with Stan, and I think it's fitting as well of this section, is the Fort Garry Dark. He loved home. there's a little bit of like there, you know, this section has some darkness. Our lives have some darkness, but there's also like an incredible goodness when we can stick close to Jesus. Mm. So for me, yeah, that's the snack, which is nice. A meal.
Very that's good. Nice. Very good. That's
these yeah. are all meals.
Those are huge meals suggested for snacks. Yeah. All of them better than John the Baptist's head on a platter.
Yes. Definitely.
All right. Good chat. We invite you friends to contribute. What is going on here? Do you hear that?
Are we on this a flight path? Path. Plane. This is a flight path.
So
you're
loud.
Just figuring that out? How
that's
many times have you come here?
Incredibly loud.
Yeah.
Okay. We invite you friends to contribute. I don't know if people can hear that on.
Plane's been flying since like the early 1900s.
The
man.
Wright brothers.
Shocked by this?
Okay, let me finish. We invite you friends to contribute your own thoughts and responses to the comment section of the post on WinnipegCovenant.ca by engaging a friend or two in some conversations. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, whatever.
If somebody had that on 1.5 or 2 speed.
The important thing, next week, or at least next episode, will be the ending of Matthew 21 through 28, and that's sort of like right from the triumphal entry all the way through Jesus' trial, his crucifixion, and his resurrection, the real. Hmm. It's the ending of the gospel, but it's also the center of the gospel. So that's what we'll chat about next time, probably just about in time for Lent, which will be great. And in the meantime, pay attention. God is speaking in the scriptures. Pay attention. God is speaking in your own heart. And pay attention. God is speaking in the wisdom of one another.